If Darwinian theory is such a poor theory, why don't more scientists reject it?
There are two reasons why more scientists don't reject it. One is that if they did, they would lose all of their prestige within science. They would never get another research grant. And if they didn't have academic tenure, they'd get fired. There is a system of thought control over this, which is extremely rigid. It's worth your professional life. That's another reason why an outsider has to be the one to challenge this. So that's reason number one. There's an enforcement mechanism. And even senior people are frightened about it, and they'll tell you if you, you know, get them aside where they don't think they're being overheard. The second reason is ideological. The great problem is that if Darwinism isn't true, science doesn't know what is true. You see, if the microevolution explanation isn't extrapolated to explain all of creation, then they don't know how it could have happened, and that's intolerable. All of the philosophers of science that are writing for the modern era have explained that science doesn't like to have no answer. You see, they will prefer to stick with an inadequate paradigm or general theory rather than to say, well, we just don't know what it is, because then they don't have any place to start proposing experiments, drafting grant proposals for research grants, and so on. So they'll stick with the false theory if the only alternative is no theory at all, and that's the situation that they're in.
Hello. You're probably wondering what I'm doing here. After all, even though I've done my time in the classroom as a student and as teacher, I'm better known as a writer, public speaker, social activist, game show host, even a speechwriter for Presidents Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford. Despite everything else I've done, though, I'm probably best known as an actor, and particularly for this role.
Bueller.
Life has been very good to me. I'm very grateful. Like most people, I also have questions, very big questions, like how did we get here? Where are we going? Is there a meaning and purpose in life? Are we, the universe and everything in it, merely the result of pure dumb fate and chance? For most of my life, I believe the answers to these questions were fairly straightforward. Everything that exists was created by a loving God. That includes rocks, trees, animals, people, really everything. All along, I've been well aware that other people, very smart people, believe otherwise. Rather than God's handiwork, they see the universe as the product of random particle collisions and chemical reactions. And rather than regard humankind as carrying the spark of the divine, they believe we're nothing more than mud animated by lightning. Somehow, that mud found a way to grow, reproduce, swim, crawl, breathe, walk, and eventually think. I have no problem if people want to believe that sort of thing. After all, we believe in a free society. This isn't Nazi Germany. People are entitled here to believe and say whatever they want about belief in God and the development of life. At least, that's what I used to think. This is Dr. Richard von Sternberg, mild-mannered research scientist. Until 2005, he also edited a small scientific journal affiliated with the Smithsonian Institution in Washington, until he published an article by this man. As a result, Dr. Sternberg quickly found himself the object of a massive campaign that smeared his reputation and came close to destroying his career.
After the publication of the Meyer article, the climate changed. It moved from being chilly to being outright hostile. Shunned, yes, and discredited. What I'm asking for is the freedom to follow the evidence wherever it leads.
What was so damning about this article? Nothing, as far as I could tell. It merely suggested that perhaps we aren't mud animated by lightning after all. Dr. Meyer argued that there are signs of intelligent design in nature. The digital code in our DNA could not have come about by accident. Instead of a cosmic mistake, he says the evidence seems to indicate that we are the product of a higher intelligence. Publishing Dr. Meyer's paper would not have been an issue if we were living in the time of Galileo or Einstein. But unfortunately for Dr. Sternberg, we live in a very different era. This is the era of Darwin, and in such an era, those who challenge the status quo seldom go unpunished. As I investigated this situation, I discovered Dr. Sternberg is far from alone. Many other scientists face similar persecution. They're losing their jobs, they can't get tenure, they're denied publication in scientific journals, and they're openly ridiculed and ostracized by their peers, all for questioning Darwin.
It's the kind of thing where you just learn to keep your mouth shut.
I have been told to shut up.
We were accused of being diabolical, theocratic conspirators who were trying to force religion into the classroom.
It isn't just scientists attacking these guys either. The media's in on it, the courts, the educational system. Everyone's after them. I guess I shouldn't be surprised. After all, these guys are asking some pretty dangerous questions, suggesting that Darwinism is not only improbable, it might actually be dangerous. I should know better than to ask such questions. After all, I've been warned.
On the whole, they're not scientists.
Intelligent design is not a research program.
It's all propaganda.
They're distracting you from what's important.
If there is somebody who elevates faith or scripture above evidence, then he should be fired from the science department, yes.
The more I thought about the situation, the more I wondered why we tolerate free speech in every other area of the society, but not here. What makes this situation so different? In my experience, people who are confident in their ideas are not afraid of criticism. So that tells me the Darwinists are afraid. They're hiding something.
We're so schizophrenic. We talk about things being designed and optimized, but then when you ask us, especially in public, we're all about defending neo-Darwinism.
I now realize it's my duty to get the word out, to warn others before it's too late. So I'm going to begin by warning you. Feel free to watch this film if you must, and I hope you do. But you've got to know that doing so could land you in a heap of trouble. Some of you are going to lose your friends for watching this film. Some of you may even lose your jobs. In fact, if you're a scientist with any hope of a future, I suggest you leave right now. College or high school students, especially teachers, legislators, journalists, anyone else with a stake in this debate should probably leave right now as well. But if you do leave, will anyone be left to fight this battle? Anyone? Anyone? Hi, I'm Ben Stein. Today, across our great nation, teachers and students are being bullied and silenced merely for asking questions about Darwinist and neo-Darwinist theories of evolution. Since the release of Expelled, countless kind people have asked me, what can we do to make a difference, to stand up for change, to stand up for freedom of speech? Well, here's an idea. The Academic Freedom Petition is making real change. As millions of people across this great nation demand change, they're standing up and asking for real freedom of speech. For freedom of speech for professors, researchers, students, teachers. They want free speech that works in practice, in the classroom, in the schools, not just a theory, real freedom of speech that protects freedom of inquiry everywhere in this country. The Academic Freedom Petition will return freedom of speech to the classroom. We're not against anyone. We're not trying to silence anyone. We just want everyone to be heard, if only to question. Surely this is part of the Constitution. If you will please go to the bottom of this message, note the website, go to your computer, go to that website,
and express your feeling that you want your children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren to have the freedom of speech that Americans died for, you'll be doing a good day's work today. Thank you very much, and we hope you have had a good time watching the movie, and God bless you. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So we're talking about a gradual descent down the level of intelligibility until we reach evolutionary biology. We don't even know what a species is, for heaven's sakes.
So his theory is smoke, but elegant smoke.
There's a certain elegance to it, but, you know, I think Einstein had the appropriate remark. He preferred to leave elegance to his tailor.
That was a clip in Ben Stein's new documentary, Expelled, No Intelligence Allowed. The film offers an in-depth look at science in the 21st century, specifically the scientific community's obsession with evolution and the great lengths it will go to discredit intelligent design or the religious view of creation. Here to talk about the film is actor and author, among other things. Very unique career you've had, Ben. Your first appearance, finally.
I'm Hannity and Gold. I've been waiting for years.
Well, we were happy to have you.
I know,
we've been waiting for you for years.
I can die happy now.
This is it. This is the pinnacle.
This is it.
After all, you've done Ferris Bueller.
I'm retiring now. I've been on Hannity
Ben Stein's
Gold.
Money,
I'm
Ferris
retired.
Bueller, but this is it.
This is it.
All right. In this movie,
yes.
You go to a concentration camp where Mengele...
We went to Dachau, not to Auschwitz.
Okay. And you talk about Hitler being influenced by Darwinism.
No doubt about it.
Why invoke Hitler? What are you trying to say there?
Well, our point is that Darwin, this meek, mild-mannered sage of a country estate outside London, had ideas which, when implemented, led to the Holocaust. He believed there were superior and inferior races. He believed that only fools would allow the inferior races to continue breeding. His followers and close friends in the United Kingdom said that meant we should start exterminating the Jews.
But are you implying that if you believe in evolution and Darwinism, that there's a link to the way Hitler thinks?
Today's Darwinists. No, not at all today's Darwinists. I mean, the leading Darwinists today, like Dawkins and Dennett, those people aren't even remotely in that league. But Darwinism gave the rationale for the Holocaust. There had always been anti-Semitism. There had always been racism. But to apply the idea of exterminating whole races as a good thing, as a thing that was salutary for the human race, that came out of Darwinism, and it's a frightening thing.
Yeah, I mean, but it's not what Darwinists or people who believe in evolution think. That's no way that any of us who may believe that are close or anywhere near that.
I didn't imply it. You just implied it, Alan.
But that's what you do in the film. You bring up Hitler.
No, we brought it up about Darwin, not about you.
But those who believe in evolution at all.
No, you're just making that up. You just made that up. That's just not true at all.
Why bring up Hitler?
Because Hitler was a lineal descendant of Darwin. He wasn't a lineal descendant of Alan Colmes. I don't think you were even alive.
I understand, but the implication is there.
The implication is just an implication you made up.
All right, well, that's what the implication I got from watching your movie. Could there be a scientific explanation to the creation of the world?
I don't think that... Here's my point, or at least the point we make in the movie. There's no evidence whatsoever that Darwin had anything useful to say, or anything to say, period, about how life began, or how the universe began, or how gravity began, or how physics began, or fluid motion, or thermodynamics began. He had nothing to say about that whatsoever. So why attribute that to Darwinist causes? Why not say it's just as likely that there was an intelligent designer who did that? I mean, there's no reason to believe that there wasn't an intelligent designer who did it.
Ben, welcome to the show. Good to see you.
Thank you.
One of the things you are exposing in this movie is that educators, scientists, they're ridiculed, denied tenure, fired, because they believe that there is evidence of design.
Yes,
in nature.
All you have to do is say, look, how do the planets stay in their orbits? How can a cell have a million or close to a million moving parts, all of which fit together perfectly without there being intelligent design? All you have to do is ask the question, and you get fired. Not always, but often enough.
You know, I've had many, many debates with a lot of friends of mine over the issue of creation. You know, late at night, nothing better to do, we talk about it. But it's important to me because I do believe that there is a creator. I believe there's a God. You know, I don't know how one could look at the majesty and the sophistication and the intricacy of universes within universes and the sun and the stars and gravity and all the beauty and majesty of creation and not conclude there's a God.
I don't know how either. I mean, Mr. Dawkins, this great, great atheist and Darwinist, said, well, God has kept his existence hidden. He says that in our movie. But it's not hidden. All you have to do is look at the Grand Canyon. All you have to do is look at Lake Ponderé in North Idaho. All you have to do is look at a sunset on the island of Manhattan or a sunset in Malibu, and you see the evidence of God all over.
But to be an atheist, don't you have to believe that something comes from nothing?
You have to believe that the universe originated in nothing and is rushing towards nowhere, and that just doesn't make any more sense. Let me just say, now people say to me all the time, but you have no scientific evidence for intelligent design. And it's true. We don't have a signature of an intelligent designer, except for the complexity itself is the signature.
That it all could have, first of all, that it could have existed on its own, exploded in a massive explosion, and with all the intricacy and sophistication of it all.
I mean, the chances of it are minuscule. We have mathematicians who say the chance is nil. It could not, simply as a matter of arithmetic, it couldn't have happened.
Explain a little bit more about the film, because I want to make sure people get a chance to see this.
The movie's about our plea for academic freedom and an end to academic suppression, about people who believe in intelligent design or even a possibility of intelligent design. We're sick of being pushed around. People took our God away from us and gave us Darwinism. Darwinism doesn't work. We'd like our God back.
Well, we got it. All you got to do is look at nature. Ben,
thank
good to see
so
you, my
much.
Friend. Thank you
so
for being
much.
With us.
Thank
appreciate
you,
it.
Alan.
Thank you
very
much.
With hearing, hearingunlimited.com.
Views expressed are those of the host, guests, and callers, not necessarily those of News Radio 1040 WHO.
Good morning, friends. Welcome to our Monday morning get-together. I'm going to have to hit the ground running real hard here today because we're going to have a formal debate during the first segment. You might have had an opportunity to see the movie Expelled, a movie about intelligent design. Part of the movie is devoted to the assertion that without Darwinism, Nazism would be impossible. That notion didn't settle well with Professor Hector Avalos up at ISU, who is a professor of religious studies there. And he'd like to challenge one of the presenters in the Expelled the movie, Richard Weikart, who's written on this subject, From Darwin to Hitler. And we're going to have a formal debate on the subject. To what degree was Darwinism an influence on Nazism, or was Darwinism more important than Christian anti-Judaism in explaining Nazi ideology? We're going to have the affirmative speak for about 5 minutes. Professor Richard Weikart is research fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, professor of history at California State University. In fact, he did some of his academic work at the University of Iowa in 94. Has written on this subject a book called his dissertation, Socialist Darwinism, Evolution in German Socialism, Socialist Thought from Marx to Bernstein. And his book, From Darwin to Hitler, was focus of the movie Expelled. Professor and Richard Weikart, the forum belongs to you for 5 minutes. Let her rip.
Okay. I want to thank Professor Avalos for initiating this discussion about an important question. First, I want to say that I thoroughly agree with Professor Avalos that Christian anti-Judaism was an important influence on Nazi ideology. Nazism was not drawn from any one source. So how can we know if Darwinism or Christian anti-Judaism was more important, which is the focus of this debate? I would suggest three questions to help us settle this issue. First, which is more central to Nazi ideology? Hitler's primary goal was to improve the human species, to advance human evolution. In the pivotal chapter of Nation and Race in Mein Kampf, which was the only chapter reprinted individually during the Nazi period showing its pivotal role, Hitler began and framed the entire discussion about race as an evolutionary issue. On the second page of the chapter, after discussing the struggle for existence, he stated, quote, And struggle is always a means for improving a species' health and power of resistance, and therefore a cause of its higher evolution. Hitler began his second book with a long discussion about evolution and the struggle for existence. In speeches about the Nazi worldview, Hitler always claimed that the struggle for existence was a central element of his ideology. Okay, the second question. Which of these two can explain more dimensions of Nazi ideology? Christian anti-Judaism influenced only one dimension of Nazi ideology, and this one only partially, and that's its anti-Semitism. As important as anti-Semitism is in Nazi ideology contained many other points that had nothing to do with anti-Semitism. The following seven aspects of Nazi ideology were heavily influenced by Darwinism, but not by Christian anti-Judaism. First, Nazi eugenics policies, which were forthrightly based on Darwinist thought. This included the compulsory sterilization of the disabled, forced abortions for the disabled, as well as, beginning in 1939, killing the disabled. These were all supposed to drive human evolution forward. Number two, the drive for population expansion. Darwin claimed in The Descent of Man that the birth rate should not be limited because a higher birth rate was advantageous for evolution. Hitler often expressed the exact same view. Number three, the need for living space. The Darwinian biologist-turned-geographer Friedrich Ratzel had argued that the struggle for existence was essentially a struggle for space. Hitler often expressed the need for living space in overtly Darwinian terms. This drove his militarism and resulted in the beginning of World War II when he took over Poland to try to gain living space. Number four, racial inequality. Darwin and Haeckel both argued that human inequality human inequality on the basis of Darwinian evolution. That is, there's variation within the species and races are unequal. Number five, anti-Marxism. Ernst Haeckel, the leading German Darwinist, argued that Darwinism disproved Marxism because it disproved human equality. Number six, history as a racial struggle for existence. Darwin believed that the races were in a struggle for existence and said, quote, "At some future period, not very distant as measured by centuries, the civilized races of man will almost certainly exterminate and replace throughout the world the savage races," quote closed. This idea of a racial struggle for existence did impact Hitler's anti-Semitism as well. Number seven, the evolution of moral traits. Hitler, in his famous speech, "Why Are We Anti-Semites?" in 1920, claimed that Jews had evolved bad moral traits and that Aryans had evolved good moral traits. Hitler's anti-Semitism was biological. It was not based on religion. Okay, my third and final question. Which ideology, Christianity and Christian anti-Judaism or Darwinism, did Hitler and leading Nazis embrace? Well, Hitler embraced Darwinism both publicly and in many private conversations. However, if we look at Hitler's private conversations, we find out that he normally expressed contempt for Christianity. He often criticized Christianity, especially its ethic of compassion, precisely because he thought it violated the laws of nature, especially the Darwinian struggle for existence. Okay, compared to Darwinism then, Christian anti-Judaism is not as central a theme in the Nazi worldview. It did not influence as many aspects of Nazi ideology. And neither Hitler nor most leading Nazis actually embraced Christian anti-Judaism, though they may have used it propagandistically at times to score political points. Thank you.
Thank you. That is the voice of our first debater, and his name is Professor Richard Weikart.
Okay, first of all, Professor Avalos claimed that I moved the goalpost because he quotes my definition of Darwinism on page 9 of my book. Apparently, he forgot to read the rest of my book, because in the rest of my book, I show very clearly how those two, the ideas of evolution through natural selection, did impact historically many other kinds of ideas. And I listed seven of those key ideas that influenced Nazi ideology, and the Nazis did use the idea of evolution by natural selection when they justified those particular ideas. So I did not move the goalposts. I'm just showing historically how influence worked. I want to approach the thing then that Professor Avalos posed me some questions. It seems rather bizarre to me that Professor Avalos claims that Luther's 7 points about anti-Semitism, which he read for us, are the same as Hitler's ideology, or even the same as Hitler's anti-Semitism. To give one example, Avalos plays up the idea that Luther advocated killing Jews. However, while I don't defend Luther for his religious persecution, let's be precise about this. Luther advocated killing only Jewish rabbis who continued illegally teaching Judaism. I admit that Luther's position is horrendous, but does Professor Avalos really think that this is the same as Hitler's vision of killing all Jews, men, women, and children, irrespective of their behavior? Is he trying to say that Christian anti-Judaism in the past that did result in many atrocities, admittedly, is the same as killing of 6 million, and Hitler would have killed more if he'd had time? Luther, to just give a key example of how those 7 points were hugely different than Nazi ideology, Luther wanted to convert Jews to Lutheranism, while Hitler opposed converting Jews to Christianity because Hitler thought that this would introduce their supposedly inferior racial traits into the German gene pool. Most scholars note that there was a huge shift in anti-Semitic ideology in the late 19th century that Professor Avalos doesn't acknowledge. Anti-Semitism was secularized then, resulting in a stress on racial anti-Semitism rather than religious persecution. Many leading anti-Semites, including those who influenced Hitler and the early Nazi movement, such as Theodor Fritsch, Willibald Henschel, Julius Friedrich Lehmann, embraced this racial anti-Semitism. And I should note that all of those were staunch Darwinists, too, in their interpretation of racism and racial anti-Semitism. Hitler, in his first anti-Semitic writing in 1919, explicitly argued that anti-Semitism was not based on religion, but on race. He upheld this position throughout his career. There were many aspects of Hitler's anti-Semitism that had nothing to do with anti-Judaism, but are closely connected to Darwinist ideas. The idea of biological racism rather than religious discrimination. The idea of the racial struggle for existence between Jews and Aryans. He very often couches anti-Semitism this idea of this racial struggle for existence. And the problem of racial mixture, which didn't have anything to do with Luther's points. He thought it harmed human evolution. So in these ways and many others, many aspects of Hitler's anti-Semitism had nothing to do with anti-Judaism.
Go ahead, Professor.
Okay, concerning, I'll take up the last question first about does Hitler ever quote Darwin? Hitler, as far as I know, never used the word Darwin, and certainly not in Mein Kampf he didn't. However, he does use the word evolution quite frequently. The German word is Entwicklung. Unfortunately, Mannheim often translates this as development, which is a correct translation of the word Entwicklung at times, but in the context of biological evolution, Entwicklung is the word that German biologists use for evolution, and Entwicklungstheorie is the evolution. So Hitler does often talk about evolution. I already indicated at the beginning of his pivotal chapter on nation and race, he has an extended discussion of evolution there. Also, if you look at many of his speeches, especially his secret speeches that he gave during World War II to officers, he quite often uses the term evolution. He even discusses discusses the concept of natural selection. You say I'm moving the goalpost, but I am using the definition of evolution by natural selection. Hitler clearly laid out evolution by natural selection, claimed there's a population increase, just like Darwin did. He claimed that this led to a competition between the individuals and races within the species. Hitler laid it out constantly in his secret speeches, in his private conversations. You look at the table talks, he constantly is talking about evolution. In fact, Hitler's secretary, Traudl-Junge said that Hitler often criticized Christianity but approved of human evolution. She says that in her autobiography. There are many, many other examples I could give of Hitler stating quite forthrightly that he believes in evolution, and including human evolution, both in his table talks, his secret speeches, his speeches about the Nazi worldview. Hitler said this again and again and again. He doesn't necessarily say Darwin's name, but he talks about evolution. He discusses the concept. So what we're talking about here is the concept of evolution and Darwinism. We're not necessarily saying he had to have said Darwin's name. There is actually one account where someone does claim he mentioned Darwin. One of his adjutants, Otto Wagner, claimed that Hitler did explicitly use the name Darwin. I don't know if that's true or not. It was written later on. But Hitler does quite often quote from Darwin. Whether or not Darwin says certain things in The Origin of Species, Darwin said nothing about human evolution in The Origin of Species other than what light might be shed on it. It was later in The Descent of Man that Darwin began applying Darwinism to humanity, and that's what this debate of influence is all about. So I'm not moving the goalposts. I'm simply showing how both Darwin, after the Origin of Species, as well as other Darwinists later on, applied these ideas to humanity, and Hitler did likewise. Okay. I maintain that I have demonstrated that Darwinism is more central to Nazi ideology by addressing the questions that I addressed at first. It was more central to Nazi ideology. It answers more, explains more dimensions of Nazi ideology. Professor Avalos did not even address most of those aspects of Nazi ideology that I raised, such as Nazi eugenics policies, which resulted in killing of about 200,000 disabled people, the drive for population expansion, which Darwin himself espoused in The Descent of Man, and that Hitler also embraced, the need for living space, which was one of the key factors beginning World War II. This was not just a minor factor. I mean, this was a huge factor, and it was based upon Darwinian concepts of the struggle for existence and the need for more resources for the expanding population that was engaging in a struggle for existence with the different races, and it specifically pushed him toward what he considered inferior races toward the East. The idea of racial inequality, which Darwin and Haeckel both believe was based upon human variation on the basis of their Darwinist ideas, the idea of anti-Marxism, which Haeckel, Ernst Haeckel, leading German Darwinist, and others believed Darwinism disproved it because it disproved human inequality, history is a racial struggle for existence. This is the only one that Professor Avalos actually really addressed at all. And finally, the evolution of moral traits, that the Jews had evolved immoral biological characteristics, whereas the Aryans had evolved good moral characteristics, which is why he wanted to exterminate them. All of Hitler's programs that I've mentioned here, as well as the Holocaust itself, were designed to try to advance human evolution. And Hitler says this quite explicitly time and time again in secret speeches, in private conversations, in the table talks, in Mein Kampf itself, in his second book, and in many, many other venues. Professor Avalos claimed that Hitler was a creationist. I'm going to give lots of evidence in my forthcoming book. I'm writing a book right now on Hitler's ideology, which is going to disprove this. Let me just give one example of that. That's all I have time for. In an extended conversation about evolution on October 24, 1941, Hitler lambasted Christianity, claiming that evolutionary science showed the poverty of the church's dogmas. He then stated, quote, "There have been humans at the rank at least of a baboon, in any case, for 300,000 years at least." Even though Hitler did believe in some kind of God that created natural laws, one of the natural laws Hitler thought that the God had created was the struggle for existence and evolutionary processes that could explain the racial struggle for existence and thus lead to Nazi atrocities. Thank you.
Thank you indeed, Professor Richard Weikart from Discovery Institute. This whole conversation will be up on the net this afternoon in our podcast form, as usual, at whoradio.com. You'll be able to hear it again. You'll be able to chase the links of the various debaters. Later this morning, we're going to talk with Meg Meeker. She's going to tell you, let boys be boys, and she has good reasons for that. Craig Nelson is a researcher from an organization called Project USA and says the shoes have not fallen completely in the post-fill issue. Well, I'll tell you the rest of the story after the news.
Well, then who did create the heavens and the earth?
Why do you use the word who? You see, you immediately beg the question by using the word who.
Well, then how did it get created?
Well, by a very slow process.
Well, how did it start?
Nobody knows how it started. We know the kind of event that it must have been. We know the sort of event that must have happened for the origin of life.
And what was that?
It was the origin of the first self-replicating molecule.
Right, and how did that happen?
I told you, we don't know.
So you have no idea how it started?
No, no. Nor has anybody.
Nor has anyone else. What do you think is the possibility that that intelligent design might turn out to be the answer to some issues in genetics or in evolution?
It could come about in the following way. It could be that at some earlier time, somewhere in the universe, a civilization evolved by probably some kind of Darwinian means to a very, very high level of technology and designed a form of life that they seeded onto perhaps this planet. That is a possibility and an intriguing possibility. Mm. And I suppose it's possible that you might find evidence for that if you look at the details of biochemistry, molecular biology, you might find a signature of some sort of designer.
Wait a second. Richard Dawkins thought intelligent design might be a legitimate pursuit?
And that designer could well be a higher intelligence from elsewhere in the universe. Well, but that higher intelligence would itself have had to have come about by some explicable or ultimately explicable process. It couldn't have just jumped into existence spontaneously. That's the point.
So Professor Dawkins was not against intelligent design, just certain types of designers, such as God.